guys. Welcome to Overcrest. I'm Jake, and Chris has left the screen.
Sorry, I had to,
here
I had
is. To get... What are you doing? What did you need? You needed to switchblade comb.
I needed to get my switchblade comb. Yes, I needed to have it. It was a prop for today, and I left it in the bathroom. So I got my...
I remember that. I had one of those when I was like a kid.
Yeah. And I... For what hair? You don't even have a beard now, let alone when you were a child.
Combs are for head hair, not just beard facial hair.
I don't know. Not this one. I think this is an adult comb.
Okay.
Well, it's made of stainless steel, which I think is an important aspect for what we're going to be talking about in a little bit.
It is actually. Okay. Now I get it. I was like, how is this a prop? Yeah. How is this related? It finally is coming together. Okay. So... This is a news episode, Chris.
It is.
Welcome,
news,
everyone.
And, news and good times.
And news as and with every news times. Episode, you know what we do? When we're done with the episode, we're not done, baby.
We're not done.
No. So if you are a Drivers Club member, just an FYI, I'm gonna say it right off the bat here this time.
I think that's a good idea.
Yep. So our Drivers Club members, which you can go find out more about at overcrestproductions.com/DriversClub. If you're a member, you get the behind the scenes additional recording at the end of every single news episode. We just
Which
keep going
from
after we turn
15 minutes to infinity, depending on how long we actually decide.
Yeah, infinity, I don't think is going to be. No, that's not accurate. But
well, it's
it is awesome, fun content. Sometimes the best part is like the. What would you call it? Behind the scenes Drivers Club exclusive stuff. Because
do you believe in? I have a question for you.
What?
Do you believe in the multiverse as a theory? I'm just you. Maybe
you're talking
think of
like
infinity.
Multiple. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, is there multiple variations? Because sometimes I think about it as like if the universe
dimensions.
If the universe is an infinite system, technically. And I have a point to this because I think it was funny.
I don't know where you're going.
An infinite amount of possibilities would exist because it's an infinite universe. So an infinite universe given
infinite universe just means like time and space go forever, not infinite possibilities.
And if time and space went forever, all possibilities would exist.
I don't know if that is actually correlated. But
yes,
if there's infinite different dimensions. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, regardless, continue.
Yeah, my 8-year-old, we were watching some Marvel thing, and whatever. And she goes, "Dad, there's no way the multiverse could exist because with science, there's only a particular amount of things that are possible because there's only enough cells and atoms for, you know, if you add those up, no matter how many times you do the math, there's only so many things that could happen." And I was just like, "You're right." And it like totally blew my whole mind and my theory of there being a multiverse.
I don't know.
Given enough time, do we have sausage fingers is the question.
Why?
Given enough time and space.
The entire lead up of this was just to make a stupid joke about sausage fingers.
No, haven't you seen the movie? Anyway, continue.
Where did that come from or go?
From a movie. Okay. It's from a movie.
Anyways,
don't worry about it.
Dumb. How about we get into news? You know what? First of all, let's talk. A couple updates. You and I went up and got a skittery-doo.
It's everything, everywhere, all at once. Where the people in the movie are just like you and me, except they have hot dogs for fingers.
Yeah, no, I never watched that one because it looked really bizarre.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a fantastic movie. It's really quite
very bizarre. And you're telling me they have hot dog fingers, so that is 100% reinforcing my belief that was a weird movie. And
it's rooted in the fact that all possibilities are possible. Because if there's an infinite amount of universes, time, space, and dimensions, then there will always be a dimension where you're me and I'm you, which would be a bummer. So that I'm glad
science,
I'm in this one.
What type of science would that fall under? Because we need to get someone who knows what they're
talking
physics,
about. Quantum physics and string theory. Yeah, okay. Quantum physics and string theory.
Maybe we'll go down that rabbit hole sometime because you have no idea what you're talking about, and I know I don't.
I like to think I have an idea. Anyway, continue. What do you got? What do you got? What do you got?
We're going to talk about some rust today.
Something we are very familiar with.
We are.
Up here
in the Midwest.
Are we in the Rust Belt? Or is the Rust Belt kind of like Chicago, Ohio,
Detroit?
Yeah,
I think it is. I would certainly say that we are Rust Belt adjacent at the very least.
Yeah, we're like the Rust Pocket.
we procured a Rusty implement this last weekend.
Yes, we did. Let's save that for the Drivers Club. Let's save the personal updates for Drivers Club.
Okay, that sounds good. All right. So if you want to hang out,
Skittery Doo is a Drivers Club only content you can hang out for after this episode if you're a member.
So, Chris, let's just hop right into the first story because it's going to parlay into a bigger discussion. Okay. So the first story that we're going to talk about here, this has kind of been going all over the internet right now, is that Tesla's new Cybertrucks, they've just hit the road. Like, they have not been out very long. But despite that, owners are noticing the truck's stainless steel panels starting to show signs of rust.
And nothing is, I mean, even my kids, when we're driving around the car, go, ugh, that car's rusty. Like, it's just like not good.
I did find an image, if you want to open that up and share on the screen, of the actual rust in question. I told you to open the folder and download all the, did you not download the files?
You can't just share images. We're good. Keep going. It looks like stainless steel with speckles of rust on it. Keep going.
That's dumb. All right. Well, one Cybertruck Owners Club forum member, aka one Cybertruck owner.
I was going to say, how many Cybertruck owners are there in this?
Does the guy have a jacket?
It says like Frank, and it's like written in cursive, and he's like Cybertruck Owners Club member number one. Regardless, what do you get as a member? Like, what do you have access to?
You get a Cybertruck. Yeah,
usually you get like perks. Do you get like perks at like other Cybertruck owners dudes? Cybertruck Owners Club? Is it like the aftermarket owners club of America for Cybertrucks? You get 10%
Apparently
off.
You're going to need some metal polish after this. That's maybe what you're going to get. So one forum member says they started to notice small orange flecks appearing on his truck after driving in the rain for just 2 days. Quote, just picked up my Cybertruck today. That's the guy. That's how I imagine this guy would say that. Okay.
I agree.
The service advisor specifically mentioned the Cybertrucks develop orange rust marks in the rain and that they require the vehicle to be buffed out. The owner posted follow-up photos after washing the vehicle down with soap, showing body panels already pockmarked with small orange spots. Another user noticed similar orange specks on his truck after simply driving it in the rain in LA. Quote, they documented the corrosion and told me they'll give me a call next month when the tools have arrived and they can perform the service or repair.
Wait, what tools are we talking about here?
Okay, so that's what the user wrote after taking their vehicle to the local service center, aka the Tesla dealer, right?
I've got Tesla tool number 1234 behind me on the other side. It's called a polisher. What sort of tool?
Are they waiting on? If they say it needs to be buffed out, are they saying the dealership don't have a buffer?
Well, to be fair, most dealerships hire out detailing.
Okay, well, yeah, but they have access to a detailer, right? Like, at some point, they had to detail and buff out a car. And also, since the truck has a brushed finish, how are you going to buff that and maintain, like, it's not just going to be like super duper shiny mirror finish now. So how, more importantly, Chris, and here's the biggest factor, how would that stop it from rusting in the first place? Okay, so the bigger question is, why are these things rusting, right? This requires a little bit of background knowledge, and the science of rust and metal itself, I will assure you, is actually pretty interesting.
First of all, this really takes me back.
Yeah.
This takes me back. I imagine I am 10-year-old me sitting in science class.
Yes.
With my yellow pencil, probably with like little bite marks in it. You know, so you always bite the wood pencil.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say I discovered this whole archive of like old timey, like educational videos that I'm 100% going to make use of in future episodes. So
welcome to the Republic Steel.
This is dramatic.
I haven't watched this yet, but this is dramatic. In the classroom, the teacher who looks, he's wearing a gray suit and he's slightly balding, gray hair. He's wheeling in a TV on a TV cart, which probably has a little bit of rust
that
on
you
it.
You had to take from the AV room, mind you.
Remember, like get it from the AV room. Otherwise, they also had these things where it was a tape. you had a tape that would get put into a machine and it would do a slide, like a slideshow. Mm-hmm. Like it would be like a, you know, the little 35 millimeter slides, and it would tell the slide thing to change a slide and a guy would talk. We also had those.
Getting in trouble in like fifth grade, I think, because it was like the school district got like a bunch of funding or something. And so they went over a Betamax, the big Betamax discs, right? The big ones. And so
hold on. What do you mean disc? Like video discs? Like they're white, right?
No, I'm like, it was when, what was it?
You mean a laser disc?
Laserdisc. That's it. Okay. I think it's Laserdisc.
I'm going to interrupt you because I have a thing. I went to the thrift store 2 days ago and I saw that they had these video tapes, but they were the size of a record and they came in these white, like they were white.
Isn't
like
you would slide them into something. Reel?
It looked like a giant floppy disk. Like, okay. But it was like this big and it was all these like format? 70s and 80s. I don't know. I've never seen it before. I should have done more research.
Here's an episode we need to do is the different like multimedia storage devices. Like, because there's so many weird ones in there that kind of were flash in the pan. Like we could talk about 8-track. Why is it 8-track?
Good luck making that one interesting.
That'd be so interesting. Like Betamax and then VHS and the tech behind it.
You just want to talk about
floppy disks.
You just want to talk about porn.
No, I don't want to talk about porn. My mind didn't even go there.
That's how Betamax lost. The porn industry chose VHS and Betamax went bankrupt. That is 100% what happened.
That's interesting.
Okay. I feel like we're going to be going into a clip of a ship sinking with this music.
This is not the one I edited, is it?
It is very close. Yeah, it's the same thing I checked. Or maybe not. Maybe it isn't. It's
100% not. This goes way too long. I cut a lot of this out. Will you download the correct videos, please?
I thought this was great. I like the music and everything. It's phenomenal. Yeah, I know,
but like, for the rest of these, please download the other one. Oh, hello there. I'm Mr. Scientist.
What the frick is he looking at right now? If you're listening, there's a guy in a gray suit, which largely describes the dude that was pushing in the AV cart about 2 minutes earlier in this episode. He has two accordions attached to a microscope.
It's pretty amazing. That's Dr. Carl A. Zapp.
Zapp, with two F's.
He's a consulting metallurgist.
Oh, hello there.
Hello.
You and I have just been looking at the insides of two different kinds of alloy steel, magnified about 1,000 times. These are what the metallurgist calls micrographs, and he reads them about the way you'd read a menu in the restaurant. In fact, he not only knows what's going to be on the table for dinner, but he can tell whether you've seasoned the soup properly or burned the dessert. Let's explore some of these metallurgical mysteries together, and particularly as they relate to a story that is loaded with interest.
I fucked this up so bad, didn't I, Jay?
Dude!
It's like all the science is missing, isn't it? Isn't it missing all the science?
It is. It's fine. Man. Just make sure you download clips 2 and 3 into my other crap.
They're
that
fine.
I want.
They're fine. No! Hopefully those aren't messed up.
Do you know
how
much time I spent on this morning just getting these clips right?
No.
Jerk.
How much time?
Well,
okay, hold on. Go ahead. No. I'm going to try and get Captain Science in here.
No, see, Captain
the clip
Science
you gave
is
me
fine.
Is too big. 100 megabytes, too big. Your clip sucks.
What about the one? What about resting?
That's very short. The little time-lapse thing is very short.
Yeah, but
what
did you get the new one?
What does he say? What does he say?
He talks to us about metal. Chris,
well, tell
and
me
he
what
wants
he said,
to explain
Jay.
To us what metal comprised of, you know, with the different alloys that we have as far as like what steel is. Steel is an alloy, which means it's a combination of both iron and there's sometimes some zinc in there. Sometimes there's some other issues. And what we're going to talk about specifically, because you threw me all off here, is rust. So scientifically known as iron oxide, rust is the product of a chemical reaction, or more specifically, an electromechanical process, Chris, where metal combines with oxygen in the presence of an electrolyte. That's the important part.
Mm-hmm. Is that like Gatorade?
Electrolyte, yes. Exactly. It's often often water or moisture, right? And so in the background now, you're going to play my extended slowed down clip with background music that I created of Rust as I talk to you about why the electrolyte is important in this process. So this is not the right clip. It doesn't have my music in it. I slowed it down. I added music. There's multiple clips to be shown.
Sorry, Jake.
Just disappointing me. Okay. Moisture is a critical part of the rusting process as it facilitates the movement of ions and electrons during the actual chemical reaction. So salt, as we know, can accelerate the corrosion process, but it may not be the reason you're thinking of. Okay, so I actually remember in a previous conversation, actually like years ago on the podcast, we debated why cars were so much more rusty here in the Midwest, primarily like Minnesota, Wisconsin. Right. And one of the primary reasons stated and is true is the use of road salts, right? Yes. And so I remember you claiming at the time that the reason was salt trapped the moisture and clung to surfaces, thereby increasing the likelihood of rust, which is not quite true. It actually has to do with the chemical makeup of salt itself, sodium chloride. So as mentioned, the rusting process relies on the ionization of the metal, which requires an electrolyte, which is generally water. But, oh, come on. Really? Already?
I'm already falling asleep.
You're already bored. Well, see, we need a Dr. Zach to continue on. Okay, so basically,
if you're saying that this 1950s doctor with his microscope is more interesting than you, we've got a problem.
That's actually
because
quite
I guarantee
true.
No, that guy's not the properties of rust.
Well, hello there. I didn't see you come in. Anyways, salt is an amazing electrolyte. That's why Gatorade, you know, it rehydrates you, new electrolytes. Sure. Basically, the bottom line is you have just raw steel sitting in the air without any moisture, it will never rust. It wants to attract the oxygen, it wants to create iron oxide, but it needs an electrolyte to do so.
That's where water comes in.
But here's the other thing, just real quick. If it was pure water, like distilled water, it also wouldn't rust. Because
Because seawater, I mean, seawater has obviously like hydrogen, oxygen atoms, because that's what water is.
Yeah, there's in water.
Yes, there's oxygen in water. Is that why? It doesn't need like pure oxygen. It can be any form of oxygen.
Yes. Okay. Well, I mean, so like fish can breathe, right?
Fish can breathe
through their gills and they take in oxygen because oxygen is in the water. If you have stagnant water, though, even just like pure H2O, a fish couldn't breathe because it's not oxygenated. Right. Like that's the whole process.
I'm just thinking about like the Titanic sitting at the bottom of the ocean and rusting.
Yeah, it's very rusty. That's because it's in salt water, which adds an electrolyte to help the process. OK, so the chemical makeup of salt itself serves to speed up the corrosion process is what I was getting at. And in order to prevent rust or corrosion of any kind, the metal must be protected from the elements, namely oxygen and water. This is generally done how? By coating the surface with a protective layer, whether paint, undercoating, or some other means. So how?
WD-40, fluid film.
That would work, yes.
You know, so the bottom of this car behind me.
What, not creosote. What is it?
Creosote. Yeah. Well, I think that's more about decay. Like if you look like a railroad tie or something.
Exactly.
It has creosote in it, and it's just impregnated with oil.
What am I thinking that you used to pack the old like rifles in, right? Like surplus.
Cosmoline.
Rifle. Cosmoline, that was it.
Cosmoline,
which just sounds like a very like it's definitely
1950s thing.
Soviet
Cosmoline.
It just seems like a Soviet chemical.
Yeah, Cosmoline. I had a couple
the
of guns.
The cosmonauts used Cosmoline.
This thing has like goo on the bottom of it.
Okay,
and it was like rust proof at one time by like it's old, so it probably wasn't Rusty Johnson. It was probably Rusty Johnson's uncle that rust proofed the Mercedes.
You're referring to like the little character dude that was like the
Yeah, where they drill holes in your car and shoot it full of goo, and then your car wasn't supposed to rust, but in reality, they just compromised.
Yeah, more places for it to rust. Air. All right, so
this thing is full of goo and oil, and it just I'm like literally even on my fingers now, this stuff just stains me the whole bottom of the car because it's got the goo from the rust proofing, which didn't work because the bottom of this car looks like it was on a belt sander for about 25 minutes.
Meaning what?
It's got holes in it.
It's rusty?
Oh, yeah. This car is a piece of shit.
Some may say it was driven to death.
It was, absolutely. I'll fix some it at some point. I'll get there. But well, yeah, the rust proofing stuff never works.
You are adding stainless steel components to it, which will not rust.
And no, so I'm not, because I don't want to weld stainless steel and die, basically.
You're thinking of galvanized steel.
I don't think you can weld stainless with non-stainless wire. I think it releases some.
No, it just doesn't work as well because it doesn't bind.
Is it galvanized that I'm thinking of?
Galvanized is what you're thinking of. It basically creates like chlorine.
Yeah, you can't
gas.
Weld that either.
It's
really not bad. A good idea.
Don't do it. And have you ever tried to do it and it makes like the white, flaky, bubbly stuff? No? See, I've probably shortened my lifespan a lot because I know exactly what happens when you weld
galvanized.
I've welded
some stuff and there's like white, crusty stuff on it, but that's it. You know, I've seen white, crusty, like welding zinc plated things. You weld it and there's like smoke coming off of it and there's always like white powder there. I'm like, ugh.
That's also not good. Either. No. All right. So how does stainless steel then avoid corrosion when being exposed to the same elements as other metals? Well, the short answer is it doesn't. The secret is that stainless steel creates its own protective coating. You see, stainless steel is an alloy comprised of the elements of iron, nickel, and chromium, amongst others. The chromium is the critical element here in preventing rust. Chromium is, of course, the bright reflective metal that gives that mirror-like finish to any chromed or chromium-dipped parts. So stainless steel is just an alloy made with chromium. The minimum chromium content required for steel to be considered stainless is around 10.5%. It varies based on the grade, can go up, but that is the minimum. Now, when exposed to air, the chromium embedded in the steel reacts with oxygen in the atmosphere to form a thin protective layer of chromium oxide on the surface of the metal. This is technically a type of corrosion itself, something akin to a chrome rust, Chris. So it's not that stainless steel doesn't corrode. It's just that it creates its own corrosion layer that is this chromium oxide. So this layer is passive and it adheres tightly to the stainless steel, creating a barrier that prevents further oxygen and moisture from reaching undermining metal.
While you're talking about this, I've been looking to try and find out how much chromium is in Tesla's stainless steel.
You cannot find it. I get there.
It is proprietary.
It's proprietary. Blend. Yep, I get there. Yeah. We'll get around there. So this passive layer of chromium oxide is what gives stainless steel its corrosion resistant properties, not unlike paint or any other finish on a non-stainless steel item. So that's all well and good, but I kind of wondered what happens when this layer gets removed or damaged, right? Like what happens when you scrape stainless steel? You're exposing new metal. Well, the underlying stainless alloy becomes exposed and the surrounding environment, which creates, you know, there is no resistance.
What so it's only on the coating. Chromium. So is it created that way?
No,
or is that the problem?
That's what I mean by it's passives. Okay, so here's what I'm going to explain. Listen, let's say you take chromium and you like cut it in half, or you take stainless and cut it in half. Now there's no coating. It's exposed. That protective layer isn't there anymore, and the exposed stainless steel is susceptible to corrosion effects of oxygen and moisture until the chromium oxide layer is redeveloped. And it's a passive process. It just happens like rust, but it doesn't happen instantly. In the presence of oxygen, the chromium in the stainless steel reacts with the air to form this new chromium oxide layer, and that's what restores the resistance of the corrosion of the stainless. However, it's important to note the speed at which repassivization occurs can depend on, you know, numerous factors such as the composition, the environmental conditions, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so that's how stainless
rust. Here's what's interesting. If the iron in the stainless steel alloy begins to react with the oxygen before that chromium can, it will produce standard iron oxide rust.
And then it will never passively come back to stainless.
Stainless can rust, right?
Okay, so here's my theory. I don't know if you want my theory on this, blah, blah, blah. Well, we'll get to my theory after. Keep going. I'll save my theory.
Okay, so you were asking about the Cybertruck and what it's made of, and I looked it up. The Cybertruck is made from what Tesla calls 30X cold-rolled stainless steel. Now, cold-rolling is just the
processing
technique.
That sounds like it was made by, like, rednecks, like the 30X cold-rolled stainless steel.
Oh, it's like Monster Energy 30X. Yeah. So cold rolling means nothing.
Like you get into it and you're immediately swole just by getting into this thing.
Yeah. So the cold rolling means nothing. The 30X stainless, I looked up and some scientist did a whole thing on it. He goes, it's most likely referring to a 300 series stainless steel, which is just a classification of a variety of different grades of stainless steel with a set ranges of the chromium.
So it's just saying 30 and X is like a variable, like it's 30 X is a variable.
Yes.
So it's just, it's like an advancement of the 300 series.
Yeah. But it really, it's just saying, but even the 300 series doesn't specify what grade it is. So there's no actual grade of alloy like publicly available that Tesla uses. So we have no idea what the chromium content is. However, the numerous reports of the Cybertruck rusting this quickly with nothing but exposure to some water does kind of beg the question of its quality. Usually corrosion and the formation of iron oxide or rust on a high quality stainless is a product of salt exposure, chemical etching, or extreme heat, none of which these brand new vehicles should have been exposed to. So what the heck is going on and why are these things rusting, Chris? Well, when we get to the bottom of the issue,
I have a theory immediately,
and
it is, and it's so obvious and apparent to me that everybody that's seizing on this and going, oh, they're rusting. Oh, my God, where are these junk?
And don't spoil it.
I will not spoil it, but I will say they are wrong.
Correct.
And shame on them for just, it's almost like there's like this, if they could just seize on anything to like ruin somebody's day,
what it is.
Yeah. Or they just want to troll or be right or shit on Tesla, or obviously they're just shitting on Elon at this point.
Yes.
It's just like, dude, like, just chill out.
Okay. So the big question, why are Cybertrucks rusting? The answer at the end of the day is they aren't.
They aren't rusting.
They aren't rusting. The small areas of rust found on the surface of these Cybertrucks are actually environmental contaminants. What does that mean? Little specks of metal are likely to become embedded in the micropores of stainless panels and start to corrode, leaving rust stains on the surface of the otherwise stainless steel. The particles are not unique to Cybertrucks, keep in mind. They happen all the time. Sometimes
a white car? Jake, yes, have you ever owned a white car?
Did you see the image? I found a really good example image in that folder I sent you, which I don't think we can share. But it's nothing new. It's sometimes called rust dust or rail dust. These specks of iron are commonly found when vehicles are transported by rail. Trains are heavy things, it turns out. And mile after mile of steel wheels rolling and grinding against steel tracks makes for the occasional sparks or debris that is kind of kicked up onto the vehicles. Right, so
here it is. This is a white car. Yep. And this is, and there's a word for this, and there's something it's called fallout.
Yes, which that is a detailing term, right?
It is. It is a detailing term. Now, all these specks that you see right here, and if you look at this image, they're all like little black. Some of them are orange.
Because they're starting to rust.
Do you remember that that 996 that I bought that had like 290,000 miles on it?
Yes.
So, and we'll talk about this with our very special guest here in a little bit. To talk about what's going on here. But I got this thing and it was covered. It looked just like this. And I went and I buffed it out and it didn't really get much better. And I was like, what is this? So I got something called, I don't have any
fallout
near me,
remover.
Iron and fallout remover. And it reacts purple. And you see this on like people do it with their wheels.
Yep. It's big on wheels.
Big on wheels because you have metal brake pads. The car looks like it's absolutely bleeding to death.
Yep.
As this stuff is dissolved out of the paint.
So just to show the extent too, since you did open up that folder, open up the Cybertruck one too. I named it Cyber Rust just to show like what we're talking about, because you're right. This is getting hugely blown out of proportion and it's just, it's specs.
It's the tiniest of tiny little
specs. It's
any press right now for, Tesla's Cybertruck is going to be bad because the entire media is against them because I'm not going to get into that.
All right.
Whatever. So, but like, that's what it looks like.
And
this does not look good.
No, it
Let's
doesn't.
Let's be clear.
Because you're expecting stainless to be not able to rust. Exactly. Here, that's why we talked about it.
Is I feel like this has gotten, it's happening a lot faster to this because there's no clear coat at all. There's no protection whatsoever. It doesn't have like, you have a clear coat on a car. It's very smooth. It's very.
Right. It won't adhere or embed into.
Yeah. It doesn't have
the paint
until it's old and been scratched and run through the car wash all the time.
Right.
Where the particles have a place to sit. A newer car would never do this.
How do these deposits happen? Like, where does this iron come from usually?
So, So one thing, you've got a clip here and we can play it while we talk.
Yeah, because it's this perspective is terrifying, this video.
So this is one reason, and this kind of just harkens to what would it be? Do I have to play this whole thing? I'm just skipping it a little bit. And that's like industrial fallout, right? Yes. So like a train, something like that, that's going to generate a lot of fallout. You know, you've got iron on iron, but the main place that you get it from is metal brake pads. Metal brake pads, you're driving around the road, people use their brakes, goes floating all over the place, settles on the car. That's where you're going to get the main fallout.
I mean, to be clear, like all brake pad, what do you call it, material has like metal in it. It is ground up different stuff, which is not
so
just
metal. So talk about this to get to the point. Everybody's freaking out. It's nothing.
Yeah, it's a common issue blown out of proportion simply because of the fact that this is the first car to be made of stainless steel since, well, the DeLorean. And let's be honest, Tesla doesn't rust have. Too? What?
Did those rust too? I wonder if the DeLorean has this issue, because like the only time you ever see these now is some dude driving it to a Cars and Coffee.
Right.
You know, nobody's driving these around.
I bet they like actually polish or like, you know, they take Scotch-Brite to them and clean them. Like,
yeah. You also didn't have like an entire media conglomerate trying
to shit all over them. What I was going to say, like, let's be honest, Tesla hasn't had the best track record when it comes to like paint finishes and fit and finish.
It just seems like the attention to detail on this is not good. Like,
no,
they should have known this would happen. They should.
Well, like I mentioned it somewhere in here that usually cars are inspected at the dealer upon delivery and many times get a detail or paint correction if they're needed to remove this fallout from the finish. Right. Mm-hmm. Like that is pretty common. Yes.
Yeah. They were pretty common. Open trailer or whatever.
And okay, if you go,
so
to,
I wanted to ask an expert about this. Okay. So I called up my very good friend, Jeff Brown, who is the big brain, the science guy. It has a lot to do with the products that Griot's Garage develops. And I couldn't think of anyone better than him to find out what fallout is. We talked about it a little bit, but what fallout is, how you deal with it, and maybe what was going
on.
And
what is the chemical? Why does it turn purple?
And why does it smell so? The infamous Jeff Brown. How's it going, my man?
It's going, man. Just having fun in my garage.
Yeah, glad that's it. Here. You are so like. What do you do at Griot's? Like, kind of, what's your shtick? You know, kind of like, because I've been over like at your place, like smelling things, seeing things that I'm not supposed to see. Whether it's like buffers or polishers or car products, like you got a lot going on.
It's never a dull moment. I definitely look forward to getting up in the morning. I wouldn't call it work. You know, you do know that you had a pretty strong hand in the development of one of our new successful products. So
nice.
I brought this just for you.
Light them up. Stinky be gone.
Stinky be gone.
I felt like for a moment there, we were going through all these different scents, which was like naked on the beach and like
top secret.
Or beach ball, Bolivia, like all these different scents. I'm making these up. None of these are accurate. Just FYI. But it was, I felt like afterward I needed to go to, you know, how that, you know, the perfume place got the little thing of coffee beans.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I needed to do that. There was a lot of smells. So, I thought this would be a perfect opportunity to have you on and talk since you have so much to do with the development of products with Griot's, which is a, you know, like if you even look right back here on my shelf, there's a lot of Griot's products back there, much of which I paid for myself. And, I love your guys' company. I love what you do. And I think you make some of the greatest products out there. So knowing you, this was a perfect fit. And I wanted to talk about this Cybertruck thing and the rust that people are seeing on the Cybertrucks. And as we talk leading up to this, everybody's like freaking out. My Cybertruck is rusting, but it's not, right? Like, what are we looking at here?
Well, there's definitely a snowball. You know, the media, they're going to look for any opportunity to throw stones, but well, not all media, right, Chris?
Yeah, not all.
Not all. you know, if you look at vehicles, I don't care if you're a Chevy guy, a Ford guy, Toyota, or Dodge, another brand, it's really irrelevant. At the end of the day, vehicle surfaces are like constantly being bombarded by the elements. I hope that for Tesla's sake, that it is their issue, not something else that I may just chat on a little bit in our conversation. But yeah, you can buy a brand new vehicle, regardless of the brand, and they could be rusting right off the new car lot. So
I was thinking, like, my theory was, is because there's no clear coat, it's unprotected, it's a steel surface, which is way more porous than like a clear coated, a brand new car, even though brand new cars do get this stuff. I felt like that was part of the issue.
Yeah. I think my initial response is that the stainless steel is a lighter color, much like a white vehicle. And the contrast from a ferrous particle or rust that's corroding on the surface is going to be is much stronger, more apparent to the naked eye than perhaps if it were painted black, right? It's definitely going to be more obvious. And you'll find that if you look at a white vehicle, or silver, you'll see often particles of rust, and it's a lot of times on the horizontal surfaces, definitely on the rear of the vehicle. So again, that's what I hope the situation is.
So is there any way to prevent this from happening, or is this just something that you have to continually monitor? Like, is there anything that, like, if you're a Tesla owner or a Cybertruck owner, you just have to like constantly clean this up, like sweeping the floor in your house? Or is this, you know, it just seems like it's happening a little aggressively on that thing, at least for those particular people.
Sure. Well, you have to look at the root of the cause. And if you look for the source of those rust particles, like, you have to look at one, are they specks that are like uniformly spread throughout the vehicle? And that typically will imply that a ferrous contaminant has like attached itself to the vehicle surface. If you start to see like a, you know, if you took a raw piece of steel and stuck it out in a field, and just the exposure to rain, you'll start to see different appearances like streaks or, which would indicate that it's not particle contamination. It's actually, the alloy is being affected or oxidized. So those are two different things. If you look at the source for the, you know, what I would call a ferrous contaminant, like, what would you suggest would be a good common source, Chris? Like,
brake pads.
What comes to mind? Yep. You've got, you know, often semi-metallic brake pads with friction on a steel rotor. Those ferrous particles are constantly being thrown into the air and attaching themselves to your vehicle surface. So that's a very common space or source, I should say. The other one would be transport by rail. And, you know, most manufacturers, you see, if you do see a rail car loaded with vehicles, what do you traditionally see?
Don't they have that white wrap like on everything? Yeah.
Yep. So that's obviously a major investment. Like back in the 90s when I worked at Burnsville Volkswagen, like that wasn't a common practice to wrap the vehicles. You had to do like a chemical treatment to dissolve all those ferrous particles that have embedded themselves into the surface. So my question to Tesla is like, hey, you guys, are you investing in wrapping the vehicles? Are they even being transported by rail? You know, that certainly could be the root of the cause. So
yeah, there's certainly a lack of transparency. Like something like this happens, you could just be, oh yeah, well we from now on we'll wrap them in white stuff, or yeah, our stainless steel is more porous than other stainless steels, but it's way harder. Your upkeep on this is just going to be different. You know, it's just nobody really knows what's going on because the PR, like Tesla's PR machine is awful. Like, you never get a straight answer out of anything. So, like, what? So this, I'm thinking of like Griot's iron and fallout remover. Hashtag not an ad for Griot's, but I guess it almost kind of is because we're going to talk about it. Is this like the same thing you were using when like you were back in Burnsville? Like, how did this like product come about? Is it a similar thing, or how has it evolved?
So back then it was traditionally like oxalic acid. So it was a corrosive that you would apply to the surface and you're going to chemically dissolve those ferrous particles. You know, at that same time, paint cleaning clay or detailing clay or whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of different brands out there, but clay was a, you know, this is our example, was like a sticky bar of clay that you would glide over the surface. Everyone, any, you know, car person's probably pretty familiar with it. That would mechanically shear or pluck those particles from the surface.
But way more time consuming. That shit takes forever. Clay barring a car sucks.
it's not the best. There's certainly you need to come down and have an hour or two when spring hits, Chris.
Why? So I can clay bar your car? No way.
No, man. We'll do the R. That thing last time I drove it, it needed a little love. So yeah. I'd love to do that. But anyways, back on track. The thing with stainless steel is what happens when you rub on it. Like, and you
fingerprints immediately
abrade it
attracts like fingerprints, dirt, everything. Yeah,
very temperamental to a degree. It's a, you know, machine surface. It's got linear lines in it, and the more you rub on it, much like if you were to take a matte black, you know, AMG or BMW or something that was matte or satin in appearance, the more if you mechanically abrade the surface, it could be a fine polish. It could be even scrubbing on it with a non-abrasive microfiber. It's going to affect the appearance.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to change the appearance. So I would not advocate claying on a Cybertruck or stainless steel. You know, our Griot's clay is like super non-abrasive. So that could work. Sure. But I think the least invasive approach is going to be key. The last thing you want to do is to work, let's say, the horizontal surfaces and have like this sheeny satin gloss, then matte finish, and just have it just be very inconsistent in appearance. That would be bad. So,
yeah, it's going to look all splotchy.
Yeah. In fact, I did a little research, Chris, and the, you know, Wes Morrill, he's one of the Tesla engineers, he recommended using Barkeeper's Friend, which is basically oxalic acid.
Okay.
Or Scotch, non-abrasive Scotch-Brite pads from 3M here in our backyard.
Is that called a sponge? What's a non-abrasive Scotch-Brite pad? Like, I think Scotch-Brite, I immediately think of like the most abrasive shit ever.
Like a, well, they have a very wide range of they call it a non-woven material. It could go from some like the white Scotch-Brite, which is said to be non-abrasive or non, wouldn't potentially enhance the gloss or the sheen on the surface. Whereas like red Scotch-Brite is the farther end. It's going to,
that's the one I use.
Yeah. When you're prepping all your BMW parts. So, if it were me, like I always kind of look at like, what would I do if I had a Tesla in my garage and it was mine? I would not touch it with anything mechanical, whether it's Barkeeper's Friend, Scotch-Brite, I would stay far away from that. So
no polishing, really, no buffing of that thing.
Yeah. I mean, unless you want to, you know, you want to spend 150 hours like polishing the Cybertruck into a chrome appearance, which could be, you know, potentially pretty, I'm sure somebody will do it.
Yeah.
So what's, you alluded to it, or you suggested earlier, like, hey, what'd you use back in the day? It was oxalic acid. You mentioned iron and fallout remover. Iron and fallout remover is that funky smelling, formula that, you know, could potentially upset your wife, when you use it in the garage. So be forewarned, but it's a chemical that is, using a primarily what's called, and I'm not a chemist, but I may mispronounce it, sodium theoglycolate. And that
sounds like something that was in one of my meals yesterday when I looked at the ingredients list.
No, that was MSG, probably monosodium glutamate. You know, you're probably having some Taco Bell or something.
I love my monosodium glutamate. It tastes so good.
It does. I mean, you get into a bag of Doritos and you can't put them down. So, yeah. So I don't want to get too geeked out, but that formula is pH balanced and it's designed to remove the ferrous particles from the surface without agitation. So it's a simple spray on, allow to dwell.
Yep.
And you'll start to see purple, you know,
like whoever designed this stuff must have just been like, holy shit, it turns purple. This is marketing genius. Because anytime that you can spray, like I use the heavy duty wheel cleaner too, and you spray it on your wheels and it turns purple. Anytime you can have some, it's almost like the heat shirts where you would like, you get warm and the shirt would turn color. It's like, oh, this is so cool. But like the changing of the colors is like a chemical process. It's not something that's added in for dramatic effect.
You know, you really quick, I have ADHD, so admittedly, but like you brought up this weekend, my son was home and I told him about my vintage Genera sweatshirt. Do you remember Genera?
Nope.
Chris, come on, man.
I don't know.
Anyways, it had a print on the front that would change colors with heat.
Our first Overcrest rally shirts do that. The logo comes up if you get warm. It says like Overcrest, but then in the back the rally logo pops up if you do it. But it just seems like the marketing genius of having what you do have a visual. I soap my car, it just looks like I soap my car. But if I wash my car, and I guess I do get the satisfaction that it looks better than it did before I washed it. So I guess that's kind of like a reaction. But if it turned pink when I sprayed the foam on, that would be kind of neat. And this is it doing something or is it like added in?
No, it's part of it's an actual, I think it's basically the chemical reaction. And again, I'm not a chemist, but if you were to get like real nerdy, it's a redox reaction. And it's basically like voodoo electrons transferring, from one to the other. I'm not going to like go crazy, but, to simply put it, the sodium thioglycolate in like all iron and folate removers, this is effectively like breaking down those ferrous particle contaminants and releasing them from the surface. And it's doing it in a way that's non-invasive. So it's not going to chemically stain stainless steel, like obviously in a Cybertruck, reeling it back in. That's the most important aspect of it. If you're using those types of products on like a European car with anodized trim, it's not going to permanently etch or stain those surfaces. Same with brake components, that kind of thing. So, it's a much safer approach. And that's, if in fact that is the issue with the Cybertruck, that is what I would suggest in spraying on a dry, cool truck from the bottom up so that you get even distribution of the chemical, let it dwell. Dwell time really depends on your environment. It could be 5 minutes. If you're in a cool, high humidity environment, it could be 10. You just don't want the product to dry.
Yep.
Once that reaction has taken place, just simple as rinsing it off.
Do you want to use like a sponge, like a microfiber sponge or a wash sponge and agitate it before you wipe it off?
Me personally, like if you want, there's always like the best way to, if you want to just get super geeky, the best way is to initially do that first chemical treatment, rinse it off. And then I might even dry the surface because, if you have water on the surface and you're applying a chemical, it's going to dilute it, right?
Yeah.
Reduce its concentration. So I would apply it, dry it. And I didn't mention this earlier, one way to really determine if it is in fact a ferrous particle is just to run your hand over the surface.
So you'll feel it.
Yeah. You're going to feel it. Yeah. So, if you're done with that first application, dry it and run your hand over the surface. If you still feel that contamination, then I'll do it again. Hit it again.
Yeah. All right, dude. It's, thanks for giving us the info. I appreciate it.
All right, man.
You enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Chris. See you, bud.
Yep.
Take care.
All right. That's amazing of Jeff to come on and talk to us. He's a pro and, Yeah, every time something bad happens to my car or I take it through a touch car wash, I send him a picture and he just sends
me
a crying emoji.
The old slap and scratch, you mean.
The old slap and scratch. Yes. All right, before we get into a little bit more news, what have you got for us?
Yeah, let's take a minute to talk about our friends Petrolbox. Petrolbox is a multi-service made specifically for the automotive enthusiast. Each month, they carefully select items, including tools, detailing supplies. I have gotten some fallout remover from them. Apparel, garage gear, stickers, pins, publications, hats. They give us gloves sometimes. And it's all sent right there to your doorstep. It's a curated selection of the latest and greatest gear in the industry. And there's actually two different levels of subscription to choose from. The Petrolbox Basic costs less than $20 a month, while the Petrolbox Premium gets you even more gear for $39.95 a month. I haven't seen any beard combs in a switchblade in Petrolbox. We'll have to get
after
them.
Well, you don't want to alienate people that don't have a beard or can't. I mean, what would this do for you? Nothing.
Yeah, it's like, too bad because I have so much hair on top of my head where people normally use combs.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
Check them out at mypetrolbox.com and be sure to use the code Overcrest. That'll give you a discount when you get your first order. Okay.
Jake.
Yes.
A school bus size satellite is set to crash into Earth's atmosphere this week. Recent photographs captured in space depict the dramatic descent of the European Space Agency ERS-2 observation satellite as it hurtles towards Earth's atmosphere for its final journey. Originally launched in 1995, the satellite diligently served its purpose until its mission concluded in 2011.
What did this thing do? What kind of satellite?
It just like monitored snap images of things and probably a lot of these satellites, I think, have multi-purpose.
Like NSA.
They do certain things.
This is NSA, 100%.
Well, it's European Space Agency, so I guess what do they have?
The NSA ESA? Hacked into it and like used it
I'm sure they absolutely did. So this thing, usually these things have a controlled descent. So they meticulously...
Are you going to explain this? Because I don't understand how that works. Are you going to get into this?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. Feel free to interrupt me at any time. I don't care. Over the span of 2 months in that year, in 2011, the ESA meticulously orchestrated a series of deorbiting maneuvers to initiate the satellite's controlled descent towards Earth, ensuring a safe and calculated demise. Despite the uncertainty surrounding its exact reentry location scheduled for February 21st, which is the day that this podcast comes out, ESA assures such maneuvers are routine and designed to minimize any potential risks. These controlled reentries are critical for safeguarding the integrity of our bustling space environment. You don't want this thing to crash into other satellites. You don't want it to crash into the International Space Station.
Probably
not.
So
a lot of times what they'll do
is... We saw a whole movie about that and it wasn't good. Sandra Bullock was not happy about it.
Not happy. So this thing weighs about 5,000 pounds, which is pretty significant.
That's hefty,
So what they do is they jettison all the fuel and they can control its rate of descent. By controlling the trajectory of it, like I don't know exactly all the things that they do, you know, but they can somewhat control the descent of this thing. While the spectacle of a satellite, I have this blacked out and I accidentally clicked off because I didn't want you to see anything that we're talking
anything.
About. Anything. While the spectacle of satellite reentering Earth's atmosphere may seem dramatic, such occurrences are relatively common. Similar sized objects frequently undergo controlled reentries, with the majority disintegrating harmlessly upon contact with Earth's atmosphere. ESA reassures that any resulting fragments are unlikely to pose a threat unless they hit you in the head.
Right,
with the vast majority expected to disintegrate harmlessly or fall into the ocean. Okay, so this stuff does definitely do that. As ERS-2 nears the end of its journey, it serves as a reminder of the careful stewardship required to blah, blah, blah. Who gives a shit? Okay, so this thing is the size of a school bus. So I was kind of curious as to like a little bit of the physics surrounding what would happen. So if this thing, this satellite, the size of a school bus were to crash to Earth, it would have the force of 0.02 tons of TNT. And then I didn't know what 0.02 tons of TNT was. So I did some math and found out that's about 150 sticks of dynamite.
Okay.
So if you brought 150 sticks of dynamite into your house and blew it up, that's pretty much the force that would happen with this thing running into your house.
Are we assuming that is not including any of it disintegrating, right?
Somehow we don't know. Made it
miraculously all whole, one chunk it, landed
even
on
if
my
the
roof.
Size of like a chunk the size of a basketball, like would hit you or your house or your car, would do massive damage. massive. Yeah. So I always am waiting for this stuff to happen. I found some pictures in, they were super crappy, but some pictures in like China where there's a couple of houses that just got absolutely obliterated by unknown space debris. Nobody knows what it is. And I was like, well, let's step this up a notch. What if we filled the bus with lead?
Yeah.
Like we filled the bus with lead, set it into the earth. Yeah. Like, what would that be like? All right. So that
first of
turns
all, I don't
out
know
to
how
be,
you're getting it up there, first of all, but let's go.
We'll call up Elon and see if he can figure out how to do that.
Sure. Why not?
A bus filled with lead weighs a lot. It weighs quite a bit more than a bus filled with lead.
Yeah. How did you figure that out?
So a school bus filled with lead would have an impact of 1,000 kilotons of TNT, and that's 20,000 sticks of dynamite. As we say, weight is king when it comes to anything moving, including your car or a school bus crashing into your house.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, so then it's reached its terminal velocity. And I was like, what would happen if we accelerated the bus to the speed of sound?
Okay.
Well, doesn't it? I had to go ahead.
Wouldn't it already? What is the terminal velocity of a bus filled with lead? I assume it would go faster than the speed of sound.
No. A terminal velocity of this stuff is nowhere near the speed of sound. It doesn't matter. Air resistance, everything. Everything needs to be accelerated through the speed of sound, especially get towards the sound barrier. The air resistance becomes exponentially harder to deal with. That would be 60,000 sticks of dynamite. So literally three times the damage. So that would be 3,000 kilotons of TNT.
Sure.
Yeah. And we got to keep in mind that a nuclear bomb has about 100 kilotons of.
Right. So we're not even getting close.
Yeah. So, we far exceeded a school bus filled with lead traveling the speed of sound from the atmosphere would do significant damage. And I was like, well, that's not enough. What if it was traveling at 99% of the speed of light, Jake?
I think.
What if we accelerated this?
Like just explode.
What if we accelerated that school bus full of lead into the earth at 99% of the speed of light? I had to
Where do you even start to figure this out?
There's websites that have formulas, right? So then I got the number. I didn't even know how to say the number. So I had to put the number into ChatGPT to
10 to the whateverth, did they give you a full?
If the lead-filled school bus is traveling at 99, because we know we can't exceed.
No, you can't get to speed of light, but you can get close.
It would be 547 quintillion, 761 quadrillion, 129 trillion, 411 billion, 372 million, 184,000 sticks of dynamite. We convert that to nuclear bombs. Which are about 100 kilotons each. That's 1.3 billion nuclear bombs.
So do you have any understanding or what would this do to the planet?
It would absolutely obliterate the planet. So this,
even the
one going at the speed of sound.
Yeah.
We're talking if you look at what happened to the dinosaurs, I mean, that was what was it like? How big was
that?
That
was probably a short bus full of lead. Like that wasn't even a full sized bus.
All right. How big was the asteroid? Oh, so it was half a mile across. The one that killed the dinosaurs. Oh,
that's bigger than a short bus.
And how much energy did the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs release? How many kilotons was that? 72 teratons.
That's a cool term.
That's
a
really great word. I got to look up how many that.
That's a teraton.
72 teratons and kilotons. Oh my God. Therefore, 72 teratons is equal to hundreds, thousands, millions, 72 trillion kilotons. It's a lot. That's a lot of energy, Jake.
Yeah.
It was half a mile across an asteroid.
Yeah, that's a big guy. That's a big guy.
Yeah. So that's 1.31 nuclear bombs.
And also was going faster because it accelerated through space or not accelerated, but it wasn't just gravity that pulled it down into Earth. It already had, I'm assuming, some sort of trajectory to it.
Oh, yeah. It would have had a ton of I don't even know how fast it was going. And I had to take it a step further.
Oh, really? OK.
What if the bus full of lead was hurled by God himself and it exceeded the speed of light?
Oh,
and
can God do that?
if the bus were somehow propelled beyond the speed of light by divine force, the consequences would be unimaginable. The laws of physics as we know them would break down entirely, leading to unpredictable and potentially catastrophic outcomes, such
as we're talking like time dilation.
The fabric of space-time could be torn apart, causing disruptions on a cosmic scale.
Okay, so don't do that.
So I was just wondering, like, let's just go with the regular bus without the lead in it. Where do you want this thing to land, Jake?
Probably the ocean, right?
Really? That's your choice, the ocean?
Wait, are you talking like you want to destroy something? I was talking like for least amount of damage, right?
Nah, we want damage. What are we thinking? What are we thinking? Where do you want it to land? I'm going with Facebook headquarters. Or maybe wherever the server farms are. No, the headquarters. Let's go to the headquarters of Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we could have an alert would go off, be like, hey, there's a school bus full, like, it's not full of lead, but it's got some electrical equipment in it. It's going to be like 50 sticks of dynamite. Probably going to do a lot of damage. Everybody should go home for the day. Maybe it's just like, they're all working from home anyways.
The engine block. All we need is like the engine block to fall out along the way. And like that can hit, you know, the Facebook
plaza. That can hit Mark Zuckerberg's car. And we can go with that. And then the rest can go into it. What about you? Have any ideas? Where do you want it to land?
I didn't even think that way. I thought we were going like, where do they want these things to land? In the oceans. They don't cause any damage. Yeah. But you were going the other way.
Maybe the EU. I think maybe the EU.
That's not nice.
No, it's not, but they suck. So, all right, enough of the theoretical physics. Tell me about CSF.
Yeah, well, we know how much heat that school bus would generate, you know, coming into contact with just about anything. So it's going to need some good.
CSF is what's going to keep it together.
Cooling.
It's not going to disintegrate in the atmosphere.
No,
let's just,
that's
what we need to do? Next time the astronauts return to Earth, we just need to coat. Or just bolt all kinds of CSF radiators around the capsule.
Okay.
It would be way cheaper than whatever composite that NASA's come up with that they spend hundreds of dollars per square micrometer on. Uh-huh. Right?
Sure.
Yeah.
You're such an idiot. CSF cooling, however, is not idiotic. They have always been at the forefront of quality products for a fair price with a rich history stretching over seven decades. They provide the best high performance and OEM plus cooling systems on the market today. CSF offers over 3,000 different cooling applications for the most popular makes and models on the road. From classic copper and brass radiators for Land Cruisers, Jeeps, Datsuns, vintage 80s Mercedes, like one behind Chris right now.
Yeah,
BMWs, we're going to be throwing
a CSF radar
which
in
is
there.
Also right behind Chris right now, the BMW, Audis, Porsche platforms, all the way up to your new vehicles. Check out their expanding classic series lineup and be sure to check them out at csfrace.com or, of course, on social media where they are very active and have a lot of cool stuff going on. Okay,
all right.
Should we move into some actual news?
let's skip ahead because we have to. Jeff is going to be coming on. Let's skip ahead to the man stealing something. You want to skip ahead to that?
We can save the other one for next week. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, this is a good one. A tractor trailer full of brand new Corvettes was stolen in Arizona last Thursday, but the reason for the theft is what is so interesting. We'll say, Chris.
Okay. It wasn't just the steel Corvettes.
This was not Grand Theft Auto. No, the truck was parked at the Wilcox Loves truck stop in Arizona when Walker began to strike up a conversation with the truck driver. All was pleasant enough.
Hey. This is some pretty nice Corvettes you got there.
What you got there? What you hauling?
There's about 25 Corvettes on there. What do you think?
Yeah. Those look pretty good. Where you going?
Yeah, you keep your keys in there?
Yeah.
What do you do? Is that mobilizer on that?
It's at the truck stop. It's idling.
It's idling
right now. Yeah, and so they were striking a conversation. It was pleasant enough until the driver attempted to climb into the cab because he had enough of Walker and his stupid questions. And then Walker grabbed the driver and threw him on the ground. He climbed up in the cab, locked the doors as the actual driver is trying to get in, and drove off with the semi and all of the Corvettes.
So here's the thing. This is where things have all gone downhill. okay. in society.
This is where
30 years ago, this would not have been possible because that thing would have had a twin stick.
And oh, good point. Like okay.
99%.
I thought you were going somewhere completely different with that. And like all truck drivers would be carrying like
also
a giant like sawed off shotgun or something with them.
And let's go with both of those things.
Yes.
You would have had a twin stick and the guy probably would have like he would have
had a triple stick because one of them would have been a double barrel shotgun.
That's right. That's right.
There you go. So, OK, the semi is leaving the truck station, I assume. The cops were called. A deputy from Conkice County Sheriff's Department caught up to the stolen truck and attempted to pull it over. Walker began to swerve and force other cars off of the road. Eventually, however, he turned down a dead-end road and was forced to stop. Walker was taken into custody at the scene and questioned, where he admitted to stealing the truck, but claimed that the 10 Corvettes were on board had nothing to do with it, okay? He was not stealing the cars or the truck, Chris. He stated that he was just released from prison and simply needed to ride home.
Instead, he found a ride back to the prison, apparently.
Yes, correct. Yes. So he had just been released from jail, somehow made his way to the truck stop, probably by hitchhiking, and needed to get home. And so he decided to steal a truck to get home after getting out of prison. The stolen vehicle was safely recovered without any damage and was released to the driver so he could continue on with his delivery of Corvettes. And Walker, well, he's not going to need to worry about getting a ride home from jail because his new fresh batch of felony charges. All right, Chris, I
got a clip for you.
You need to show this footage.
All right, I'm going to pull it up. Here we go.
And there's not much description, so.
All right, I'm just going to leave this on mute and you can just...
So if you happen to be driving along Interstate 69 in northeastern Indiana a couple weeks ago, this is what you would have seen. It's quite the sight. The median of the freeway would have been full of camels, zebras, and a donkey grazing through the grass, illuminated only by the trickling flames of a burning truck nearby. Oh, that poor zebra.
Oh.
The truck was transporting said animals for a series of circus performances when it caught fire in the pre-dawn hours.
The camels! The camels just walking. They're all just chilling. The zebras are in the median.
Literally in the median of the freeway, they're just hanging out, right?
It's the best meal they've gotten in a long time.
Yeah, just as the blaze continues to spread, the animals were rescued from the trailer by a state trooper, a Grant County Sheriff's deputy, and a third Good Samaritan. I think that's him right there, the Good Samaritan. Sure looks like it.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. So that actually took some doing.
Well, yeah, they didn't want to get out. They're not stupid. Animals know what the smell of smoke is like. They're not getting out of there. They feel safe in their little hidey hole trailer.
Yeah. So while the animals were all saved without any sort of burns or damage, both officers actually were treated at the hospital for smoke inhalation. But like I said, none of the animals were injured. The truck driver was also not injured. And all northbound lanes of 169 were closed until about 6:30 a.m. due to, of course, the zebra stampede that ensued. No, that part isn't true. But it is quite an odd sight to see literally a herd of camels and zebras just along the freeway in Indiana.
The posting by the sheriff's office said, no harm to our furry friends.
Yeah.
Dude, zebras don't have fur.
What do they have?
Hair.
That's not true.
Horse hair. Nobody says horse fur.
That's true.
It's very true. All right.
That is true.
The case of the suspected Chinese spy pigeon has finally come to a close.
I did not know this was an ongoing like issue or a mystery.
Apparently it is. With Indian police clearing the feathered suspect of any wrongdoing after 8 months of detention. He was in the clink for 8 months. Do you think he was in like a bird cage or was it like a gilded cage?
Isn't that it's a classic piece of American literature, right? Something about the caged bird singing or something. The
caged birds never sings or something.
I don't know.
The avian adventure began back in May when the pigeon was apprehended near a Mumbai port sporting mysterious Chinese characters on its leg rings.
What?
Naturally, suspicions arose.
Why? Okay, no, hold on. Naturally. Why is that natural? You happen to see a pigeon that has, you know, like Chinese a thing writing on it. And you're like,
yeah, if you're like 90 years old and like you were like a World War II spy where they used to use pigeons.
Yeah, like how naturally suspicions arose,
leading authorities to detain the bird for questioning.
Come on.
I don't think they detained it for questioning.
I don't think there were any questions asked.
After a thorough investigation, it was revealed that the pigeon was, in fact, an innocent traveler, an open water racing bird hailing from Taiwan.
I see.
It seems this adventurous bird had taken a wrong turn and ended up in the middle of an international espionage drama. With the truth uncovered and no espionage charges to answer for, the pigeon was granted its freedom.
Well, that's a relief.
With the bird's innocence confirmed, it was swiftly released into wild on Tuesday, marking the end of its unexpected stint in captivity. Mumbai's finest feather detectives couldn't be reached for comment, likely too busy to keep an eye out for any other suspicious foul play.
Oh, there we go. OK.
Yeah. Also, not to forget is the pigeon that made headlines in 2016 for allegedly threatening Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi with a menacing note.
What does that mean? That
even the skies aren't safe for the occasional bird brain escapade.
Wait, do you have any info on that? You can't just reference this random fact.
He had like a carrier pigeon. He had like a note.
Showed
like
up.
How to assassinate.
At the prime minister's
Maybe it
place.
Stopped for food and, okay. and they saw it. I don't know how they saw this other one. Was it just like a cop that like spotted the pigeon with the rings?
Well,
I don't know.
Naturally, it was suspect, Chris. Naturally.
It was suspect. It was absolutely suspect. What do we got? I think we're done. I think we're going to move into some Drivers Club action. What do you say?
Yeah, now is the time.
Now
when
is the
things
time.
Really, really get off the rails.
It does. It's going to go off the rails real fast.
Real quick.
Real fast. Next week, what do we got going on next? We have Amanda Busick is coming on the podcast. She is a pit reporter for Fox. She does NASCAR, does like GT racing.
That's
super
awesome.
Interesting gal. I wanted to hear her story of how she got started being a pit reporter, which I think has got to be one of the most awesome jobs ever. I got a little clip of here of her working that I wanted to show you and get you excited about.
I'm excited
about next week.
Let's see it.
Steve, in your own words, you annihilated this countdown. You are standing in front of a trophy that cancer can't take from you, that a heart attack can't take from you.
Here you go with that Barbara Walters.
That
stuff.
No other competitor can take from you. How will this personal accomplishment define
your
life?
She's really, really good at her job.
This is awesome.
One thing that I find interesting is, you know, all of it's off the cuff, right?
This is a lifelong goal.
You
know,
you have to do a ton of prep before, but once you walk into those pits, you have no idea what's going to happen. How about like the size of the medal that guy had on?
Yeah,
that almost seemed like a cartoon medal. That was very serious.
And the big trophy behind him was pretty ridiculous.
Well, trophies
as well.
Are supposed to be big, but the medal was a little pretty huge.
Yeah,
you don't even get a medal that big for the cross country thing where you shoot the guns and then you cross country around for like
Decathlon?
6 hours. Yeah, you only get a medal that's like the size of a Pringles tin. You don't get something
that's how we measure them. I didn't know that.
Pringles tin.
Yeah. Okay. That's the official medal.
That's the first thing that came to mind. That was like 3 inches.
Are you hungry, Chris?
I do have lunch over here. Yeah. All right. We will see you guys next week.
Take care.